Chapter 23. In the command salon holo display, it all looked so neat and orderly. The planet Hapes loomed at the back of the projection, a bulging wall of light with dull green islands scattered across basic blue ocean. The battle itself was an arrow-headed column of blue friendly symbols driving through a block of red hostiles. The friendlies were trying to reach an amorphous mass, identified in blue as the Hapen Royal Navy, that was swarming a pair of ovoid symbols designated unknown. A reinforcing fleet labeled Galni was racing in from the periphery of the Hapen gravity well, its designator colors changing from friendly blue to hostile red as it traveled. But Jason knew what the battle was really like. He could feel it in the hundreds of life presences winking out every second, in the waves of anguish rolling through the force ever more powerfully. Most of all, he could sense it in Tenel Ka, in the carefully controlled anger he perceived when he reached out to her, in the fear and sadness she felt over the outcome. Was this what he had been fighting to protect all his life? A civilization that devoured itself? Was this the higher purpose Vergere had shaped him to serve? A society that sent assassins to murder children? A subtle pressure in the force drew Jason's attention to his aide, Orlop. He turned to find the Genet just looking up from the datapad in his hands. "Yes?" Jason asked. Orlop's big snout twitched uneasily. It always disconcerted him to be anticipated. But Jason didn't care. Orlop was monitoring two crucial situations on his datapad, and he had orders to interrupt immediately if the status of either changed. When Orlop took too long to compose his thoughts, Jason snatched the datapad from his hands. "I can't wait all day, Lieutenant." Jason's eyes went first to the left corner of the display, which showed an image of his cabin, where Alana sat on the floor playing with a pair of simple rag dolls. Scattered around her was a GAG special assault squad with orders to kill anyone attempting to enter the room. The other corner of the display showed Aura Singh lying unconscious on the floor of a durasteel cell, secured at the wrist and ankle by stun cuffs and fastened to the wall at 3 points by heavy chains. Only then, once he was sure that his daughter was safe and her attacker was still incapacitated, did Jason read the message on the lower part of the display. "What's this about Alliance rescue beacons, Lieutenant?"
"The signals deck started to pick them up as soon as we reverted, sir. They're about here."
Orlop extended a finger into the holodisplay, indicating a position on the far side of Galni's reinforcement fleet. But Jason's mind had wandered again, his gaze drifting back to the fight above Hapes. After the attack on his daughter, and with her mother in danger now, he was finding it hard to concentrate on his command duties. He wanted to be in a starfighter whisking Alana to safety on some anonymous world where this kind of danger could never find her. But that would not save Tenel Ka. She was down there in battle, probably aboard one of the 5 battle dragons, fighting from a standoff position at the rear of the Royal Navy.
"Colonel?"
Orlop flicked his finger, drawing Jason's attention back to the question of the rescue beacons, which were located squarely on the opposite side of the Galni reinforcement fleet from the Anakin Solo.
"I was debating whether to bother you with this at all, since any rescue vessel we dispatch will probably be destroyed. To retrieve the stranded personnel, we'd have to divert the entire fleet."
"Obviously." Jason continued to study the hologram, wondering what could have caused an Alliance crew to go EV so far from the main battle. "Any idea who?"
"Colonel Solo."
The interruption came from Major Aspara, the pale-skinned woman Tenel Ka had sent along to serve as a liaison officer to the Royal Battle Dragons in his task force.
"I hope you're not even going to consider diverting this fleet to rescue a handful of your people. The Queen Mother is already in danger, and if you allow Dutch Agalni's reinforcements, I assure you, my understanding of the Queen Mother's danger is far clearer than yours," Jason replied rather sharply. He returned his attention to Orlop. "Have the signals deck place a tracking lock on the beacons. We'll attend to them after the Queen Mother is safe." Orlop punched a button on his datapad, sending an order that he had obviously prepared in anticipation of Jason's decision. When the Genet did not look away, Jason asked, "Is there something else, Lieutenant?"
"There is,"
Orlop replied.
"The message dinghy you dispatched to Roku Depot was waiting to be taken aboard when we reverted from hyperspace."
Jason frowned. "And?"
"And the hangar chief is suspicious, Colonel,"
Orlop said.
"The pilot is requesting an immediate audience with you, and there's some question as to how she could have known our reversion coordinates."
"Commend the chief on his caution," Jason said, "and tell him to get that pilot up here now." For someone like Lumia, foreseeing the Anakin's reversion coordinates would have required only a little guesswork and some force meditation. Jason was far more surprised that she had returned at all, since he had felt nothing in the Force to suggest that either Luke or Mara had been killed. It occurred to him that Lumia might have foreseen his trap and avoided the confrontation entirely. He wondered briefly if her return ought to worry him, but, despite the reservations she had expressed recently about his ability to make the necessary sacrifices to bring order to the galaxy, he was well aware that Lumia needed him more than he needed her. In the holodisplay, the Galni fleet began to glow more brightly as the Anakin Solo closed to within range of its new long-distance turbolasers. The usurper reinforcements continued toward Hapes at maximum acceleration, clearly convinced they could reach the battle and kill Tenel Ka before Jason's task force caught up to them. Jason used the Force to depress a button on the wall, activating an intercom microphone.
"Commander Twizzle, time to grab their attention. Attack at your discretion."
Twizzle's voice came over the speaker.
"Very good, Colonel."
A few moments later, the Anakin's long-range turbolaser batteries unleashed a salvo, causing the lights to flicker and the ventilation fans to slow. In less critical parts of the ship, the effects would be even worse, plunging corridors into temporary darkness and forcing electronic systems to switch to battery power. The new turbolasers were cutting-edge technology, but they required so much power that they were unlikely to become standard armament anytime soon. A moment after the first volley, one of the Galni battle dragons started to flash with damage. The lights in the command salon flickered again, and then the vessel vanished from the holodisplay. Apparently, the Anakin had caught the target with her shields still balanced forward.
"Well done," Jason said.
He turned to Aspara.
"Would you give the Queen Mother's battle dragons clearance to open fire as soon as they're within range?"
"Of course, Colonel."
As Aspara spoke into her comlink, Jason took the opportunity to glance over Orlop's shoulder and confirm that Singh was still in her cell. Her door had been welded shut. She had not been given the antidote to Alana's paralyzing drug, and a constant stream of sleep-inducing coma gas was being piped into her cell. But Jason had to be sure. She had already demonstrated that she understood the value of timing an attack, so if she was going to attempt an escape, it would be soon.
"Sir?"
Orlop asked.
"Just checking."
Jason glanced at the image of his cabin and found Alana still playing on the floor.
"You can't be too careful."
"No, sir, you can't."
Orlop's tone was routine, but he was pouring concern into the Force.
"I'm keeping a very close eye on the situation, Colonel. You don't have to worry about that."
"Good,"
Jason said, realizing that he was drawing concern from more people in the cabin than just Orlop.
"Thank you."
He returned his gaze to the holodisplay. Several Galni battle dragons were flashing with damage, and there were holes in the formation where two more had already been destroyed.
It was far more damage than the Anakin could do with 3 long-range turbolaser batteries. Jason turned to Aspara. I didn't know the Queen Mother's battle dragons had been equipped with long-range turbolasers.
Aspara granted him a rare smile. I'm sorry, Colonel. Admiral Pelion was kind enough to share the technology after the Queen Mother assigned 2 fleets to the Galactic Alliance. The Royal High Commander instructed me to reveal the upgrade only on a need-to-know basis.
I see. Jason was irritated, but not surprised. Even among allies, secrets were not shared easily. And how widespread is this technology in the consortium?
It's not. So far, the only battle dragons carrying the new turbolasers are in our task force.
Aspara turned back to the holodisplay, where several more of the usurper's vessels were blinking.
Perhaps that will change after the Queen Mother sees how effective they are.
Don't count on it.
Jason nodded toward the holodisplay. The rear elements of Galni's reinforcement fleet were splitting off to meet the Anakin and her task force.
Now that the element of surprise is gone, the new turbo lasers will lose effectiveness fast.
Galni's ships were already pouring clouds of starfighters into space, trying to set up a defensive screen so the leading elements of the traitor fleet could continue the attack on Tenel Ka. Jason's task force began to decelerate and spread out, preparing to launch its own starfighters and take advantage of their long-range turbolasers to soften up the enemy before fully engaging.
"Colonel Solo, we can't stop to fight," Aspara said.
She pointed at Tenel Ka's small flotilla.
"The Queen Mother will be pinned against the planetary shields."
"I see that, Major."
Jason knew better than to suggest Tenel Ka could retreat planetside. There were too many enemy vessels nearby. If she had the planetary shields lowered, they would simply follow her through and take out the generator stations.
"Are you suggesting a breakthrough attempt?"
Aspara nodded.
"We have no choice. If we slow down to fight here, by the time we reach the Queen Mother, she'll be in an escape pod trying to dodge Mytils."
Aspara was right, and Jason knew it. Even with half the Galni fleet hanging back to fight his task force, the Queen Mother's flotilla would still be outnumbered nearly 3-1. What Aspara did not know was that any breakthrough attempt would also put at risk the life of the consortium's Chumda, Alana. And Jason felt certain Tenel Ka would not want that any more than he did. Aspara frowned.
"Colonel Solo, you are wasting valuable—"
Jason silenced her with a raised hand.
"Thinking is not a waste of time."
He activated the intercom microphone again.
"Commander Twizzle, how many battle dragons would be required to have a reasonable chance of breaking through that screen? And bear in mind they'll need to have enough strength left to continue pursuit."
Twizzle's answer came immediately.
"It would be better to send us all. That's our best chance."
"I didn't ask for our best chance," Jason countered. "I need a reasonable chance."
Twizzle was silent for an instant, then said,
18, sir. Berta believes that strength would give the task force a 63% chance of disrupting the Galni attack on the Queen Mother."
"Then that's what we'll do, Captain," Jason said.
Berta was the Anakin's tactical computer, a powerful mainframe operated by a squad of Bith programmers.
"Have the other 2 battle dragons stand off with the Anakin."
"Stand off?"
Aspara echoed.
"Colonel Solo, a 63% chance of saving the Queen Mother's life is not good enough. You may be too much of a coward to send in the Anakin, but I assure you every Hapen—"
"That's quite enough, Major."
Jason made a pinching motion with his fingers, and Aspara was suddenly too busy gasping for breath to continue speaking. Her accusation stung more than he cared to admit, in part because it was so true, at least when it came to Alana. He was too afraid of losing his daughter to risk her life in the middle of a pitched starship battle, and it really didn't matter that Tenel Ka would want him to make this decision. The simple fact was that there were some things he would never sacrifice, not even if it meant saving the galaxy. When Jason continued to hold his force choke, as far as gasping changed to a desperate gurgling, and her hands rose to her throat, her two aides scowled in alarm, and they stepped forward to shield her. Automatically reaching for sidearms they were not permitted to carry aboard the Anakin. Jason froze them with a glance, then turned back to Aspara.
"Your dedication is commendable, Major, but there are facets of the situation that you're unaware of, and I am doing exactly as the Mother Queen would wish. Is that clear?"
Aspara nodded and braced her hand on the arm of one of her aides.
"I'm glad we understand each other."
Jason released his force choke and allowed her to gulp down a long breath, then held out his hand.
"I doubt it will be necessary for you to communicate with Her Majesty's battle dragons until after the battle. I'll take your comlinks now."
Aspara reluctantly passed over her own comlink and nodded to her aides to do the same.
"Thank you."
Jason slipped the devices into his uniform pocket, then turned back to the holodisplay, feeling worried and useless. The 18 battle dragons he had dispatched to save Tenel Ka were already closing on Galni's defensive screen. Clouds of starfighters were pouring into space between them, and vessels on both sides were already blinking and starting to fall out of formation. Jason could not help thinking that the intelligence provided by his parents had so far been more of a curse than a blessing. It had not prevented Aurra Sing's attack on Alana, but it had sent him to Relifon with a sizable piece of the Royal Navy at exactly the wrong time, a blunder that might well end up costing Hapes her queen, and Alana her mother. The Anakin and its two escorts were concentrating their fire along one flank, trying to help open a hole through the screen. But the usurpers adjusted quickly, sliding a fresh vessel into place each time an old one was destroyed, compressing their formation as their attackers drew closer. The pursuit detail was already down to 14 battle dragons, and a third of those were blinking with various degrees of damage. Jason felt Orlop's attention. He looked over and waited until the Genet was actually looking at him, then cast a meaningful glance at the datapad.
"Everything all right there?"
"Nothing has changed."
Orlop's voice held a note of distress over Jason's apparent obsession with monitoring the assassin and the girl in his cabin.
"The pilot you asked to see has arrived."
"Good," Jason said. "We'll need a few moments of privacy."
Happy to escape Jason's presence, Aspara and her aides left immediately, followed closely by his own staff. Only Orlop lingered.
"Is there something else, Lieutenant?"
"There is,"
Orlop said.
"You probably don't need to be concerned, but we may not need to send anyone after those rescue beacons we detected. The signals deck reports a private transport headed their way."
"Good. Have signals track the vessel, and we'll make contact after the battle."
"Very good, sir."
Orlop flipped the datapad up under his wrist and turned toward the exit.
"I'll send the pilot in now."
"Thank you."
Jason extended his hand. "But leave the datapad." Orlop wrinkled his snout in concern, but passed over the datapad and departed. Jason checked the display to make certain his daughter was indeed okay, as Orlop had reported, then set the unit on a table and blanked the screen. His conversation with Lumia was going to be difficult enough without having to explain his obsession with safeguarding Alana. A moment later, a slender woman in a black flight suit appeared in the doorway, her face concealed behind a closed helmet visor. Jason immediately had the sense that something was wrong. Not dangerous, but not what he had expected either. For a moment he thought the cause might be his own feelings. Perhaps he was merely nervous about meeting Lumia after he had tried to set her up at Roku Depot. Or perhaps his real fear was that she had prevailed after all, that Luke and Mara were dead. Then Jason noticed how much taller and more slender this pilot was than Lumia, how bulky her helmet was in back, how one shoulder sagged. He let his hand drop to his lightsaber.
"That's far enough until I see your face."
The pilot stopped, and a dark flutter of amusement rippled unevenly through the Force. Leaving one hand to hang useless at her side, she reached up with the other and released the neck ring.
"You mustn't kill us."
Even modulated through a helmet speaker, her voice sounded silky and half-familiar, and it definitely did not belong to Lumia.
"We have news of your master."
"My master?"
"Your Sith master. Lumia."
The helmet rose, revealing a once beguiling face that had gone hard and sharp.
"Surely you're curious about what became of her at Roku Depot."
A pillar of fire rose inside Jason. Alima Rar had been a Gorig joiner, a member of the Killick nest that had tried to kill his daughter as a newborn. And now here she was aboard the same ship as Alana. Before he knew it, Jason had ignited his lightsaber and grabbed her in the Force. Alima allowed him to draw her closer, her eyes gleaming with unbalanced delight.
"You would do it," she snickered. "You would kill us without a thought."
Startled by the truth in her words, Jason released her.
"Without hesitation," he corrected.
How many times had Lumia told him he could not be a servant to his emotions? If he wanted to restore order, his emotions had to serve him.
"But I have been thinking about it. I've thought about it a lot."
"That is nice to know, Jason."
Alima's lip curled into an odd sneer, what she probably intended to be a coy smile that her haggard face could no longer muster.
"We have been thinking about you, too."
"And that still sends a creep down my back," Jason replied. "Now, since I really doubt you came here to fulfill a death wish, why don't you tell me about Lumia?"
Alima raised one thin eyebrow.
"You don't deny that she is your master?"
Jason shrugged.
"I doubt there would be much use in it."
He glanced at the holodisplay, where his pursuit detail was just crashing into the screen of Galni ships, then added,
"And I'm kind of in the middle of something, as you can see."
Alima's gaze went from the holodisplay to his lightsaber, and she retreated a step.
"Go ahead and kill us, then. You should."
Despite the Twi'lek's words, she seemed clearly less confident about her chances of leaving the salon alive than she had been a few minutes earlier.
"We are the only ones who know Alana's heritage, aside from you and Tenel Ka, of course."
Jason's hatred welled up inside him again. Or perhaps this time it was alarm. He had always worried that the Gorig had been told the secret of his daughter's heritage when they were engaged to assassinate her. Now Alima had confirmed his fears, and he ached to do exactly as she suggested and snuff the life from her twisted body. But it had to be a trap. The Twi'lek would never have tempted him if protecting his secret were as simple as killing her.
"I've never liked threats," Jason warned. "These days I don't tolerate them at all."
"Then it is a good thing we were not making a threat,"
Alima replied coolly.
"We were making a suggestion. Gorig tried to kill your daughter. We are all that remains of Gorig. You should kill us."
"And have gossip vids claiming that I'm Alana's father start popping up all over the consortium?"
Did we say that would happen? Alima asked innocently. We are concerned with higher purposes, Jason. We serve the balance.
Jason knew better than to believe her. Alima Rar would never have come within a light-year of him without some means of assuring her safety, and the most likely form of that assurance was the very threat she had so skillfully avoided making directly. Were Alima to fail to leave the Anakin alive, he had no doubt that the secret of his daughter's heritage would quickly become public knowledge. Jason considered killing the Twi'lek anyway, thinking it might be better for the secret of Alana's paternity to come out now while the consortium was already in such disarray. But that decision was not his to make, at least not while Tenel Ka was still alive. He glanced at the holodisplay and saw that the issue of the Queen Mother's survival remained undecided. Though the flotilla he had sent to save her was down to 10 vessels, 3 battle dragons had penetrated deep into the defensive screen and were close to breaking through, provided they did not take much more damage. Their designators were already blinking rapidly. Jason deactivated his lightsaber and turned back to Alima.
As tempting as I find your invitation, I prefer to let you live for now. Tell me what happened at Roku.
Alima's face relaxed, and she said simply,
We failed.
We? Jason asked. Who is we? You? You and the Killix? You and—
Lumia, Alima said. We have been working with her for some time.
The Twi'lek risked taking one step closer, then went on to explain how she had stumbled across Trissina Lobi spying on Ben in Fellowship Plaza, and how she had helped Lumia kill her. After that, Lumia had agreed they should work together. Alima had gone on to assassinate several members of the Bothan True Victory Party, then boarded the Anakin Solo with Lumia and accompanied her to Roku Depot to attack the Skywalkers.
Wait, Jason said. Lumia knew they would be there?
Of course. She knew the best way for you to deal with their suspicions was to betray her and send her to fight them.
Alima reached for his forearm. Then, when he jerked it away, pretended not to be bothered.
Your master was very proud of you, Jason. By betraying her, you proved that you have the strength to fulfill your destiny.
I don't know which I find harder to believe, Jason scoffed, that Lumia would work with you, or that she would be proud of me for setting her up.
Believe both, Alima retorted. We both worried that you were more committed to your family than to your mission. But your answer to Luke's suspicion convinced us we were wrong. You used everyone brilliantly, Lumia and your aunt and uncle. It proved you are capable of anything.
Thanks, Jason said, more surprised than sincere.
He was finding it hard to ignore the details Alima knew about his relationship with Lumia, but something still wasn't adding up.
You said Lumia knew she was being set up to fight the Skywalkers?
Of course, Alima said. Lumia was a Sith, after all.
And she went? And still got killed?
Alima nodded.
She knew that killing your uncle was the best way to ensure your success, but she couldn't be certain of her victory. So she wore a proton detonator on her chest. When her heartbeat stopped, the detonator exploded. We are sorry.
You saw her die?
Alima shook her head.
We're still here, are we not? But Lumia couldn't have survived. The entire cantina was destroyed. Even your aunt and uncle escaped by only 2 minutes.
The Twi'lek paused for a moment, then added,
That's why we came back. to warn you that they'll be returning to Hapes as soon as they make repairs.
Repairs?
Alima's eyes twinkled mischievously. The Jade Shadow suffered a mysterious rupture of a containment line, she said. The repairs won't be simple.
And you arranged this because...
Because you needed time to prepare, Alima said. The Skywalkers know that you set them up, too.
Jason frowned. He was growing increasingly troubled by Alima's story, though only because he sensed that she was telling the truth, at least as she knew it. His plan had been to use the Skywalkers' own fears against them by making it appear that Lumia had been following Ben. Clearly, something had gone wrong.
"What about Ben?" Jason asked.
For the first time, Alima looked confused.
"Ben?"
"Did he survive the explosion?"
Alima frowned.
"Ben was never there," she said. "That's how the Skywalkers know you betrayed them."
Jason's stomach sank. If Ben had never made the rendezvous, naturally the Skywalkers would have believed Roku Depot was a trap. But then where had Ben gone? The sinking feeling in Jason's stomach grew cold, and he turned back to the holodisplay. The rescue flotilla, or rather the 8 Battle Dragon designators still blinking on the holodisplay, had finally broken through. They would soon be in full pursuit of the Galni force moving against Tenel Ka. But Jason's gaze went to a position on the far side of the battered defensive screen, where a blinking transport symbol, labeled Longshot, was gliding toward the tiny blue blips of 4 Alliance rescue beacons.
"What is so interesting there?" Alima asked, following his gaze.
Instead of answering, Jason oriented himself toward the real physical rescue beacons, then reached out in the force and sensed 4 presences, 3 of them familiar. They seemed healthy, though perhaps a little impatient, frightened, and, at least in Jaina's case, angry. Jason didn't bother even trying to guess why the 3 Jedi had returned the rover to Hapes instead of obeying their orders to rendezvous at Roku Depot, or how they had gotten themselves blasted out of their skiff. He simply flooded his presence with reassurance and tried to project that to them, so they would know help was on the way. Zek and Ben responded by projecting feelings of gratitude toward him. Jaina simply shut down.
"Isn't the long shot one of the Falcon's false transponder codes?"
Alima asked. Jason turned and found her frowning at the long shot's designator symbol.
"It might be."
If Alima noticed the suspicion and hostility in his tone, she ignored it.
"Do you think that is a good idea?"
"Do I think what is a good idea?" Jason asked.
"Allowing your parents to take your apprentice hostage," she said.
"Don't try that on me, Alima," Jason said, scowling. "I know how the Dark Nest worked. Remember?"
"How could we forget?"
Alima turned to him, the hatred in her eyes now open and honest.
"We would never try to use our powers on you, Jason. You have already proved that you are too powerful and smart for us."
"Just so we understand each other."
Jason waved her toward the door.
"My parents are going to help Ben and the others, not take them hostage."
"If that's what you believe, then we're sure we are wrong,"
Alima said.
"We are hardly as well informed as you are."
"Wrong about what?"
Jason asked. He knew this was how the Dark Nest had worked, by using a victim's own doubts against him. But Jason would have known if Alima was using the Force.
"You don't expect me to believe my parents would harm Jaina or Ben."
"They would never do that," Alima agreed. "Only we thought they had taken Corellia's side in this war."
"They have," Jason admitted. "That doesn't mean they're terrorists."
Then we must have heard wrong, Alima said. We thought they had been involved in the assassination attempt on your daughter.
They weren't, Jason said tersely. That was a misunderstanding.
No doubt, Alima said. After Roku Depot, we know you would never let a personal attachment prevent you from making a necessary sacrifice.
I wouldn't, Jason said.
We believe you.
Alima used the Force to retrieve her helmet, then turned toward the door.
Perhaps we should be going, if you are going to permit us to leave.
Jason nodded. Lieutenant Orlop will arrange an escort for you. His hands ached to kill the Twi'lek, but he did not dare. Not while he suspected it would expose the secret of Alana's paternity. You may consider the message dinghy a gift from the Galactic Alliance. Alima lifted her brow in surprise.
Thank you.
But if my relationship to Alana is ever exposed, I'll hunt you down myself.
Have no fear, Colonel Solo, Alima said. Your secret is safe with us. We know it is the only reason we are leaving here alive.
Jason nodded. I'm glad we understand each other. He waited until she reached the door, then added, There's just one more thing, Alima. If you ever come within a light year of my family again, I won't be so forgiving. Alima smiled and nodded.
Of course. We understand.
She used one hand and the Force to lift the helmet onto her head.
The balance must be served.
The Twi'lek lowered the visor and went out the door. Jason activated the intercom and asked Orlop to arrange an escort for her, then retrieved his datapad and checked to see that his daughter was still safe, and her assassin still locked away. Orlop's voice sounded from the door.
I've arranged the escort, Colonel. Would you like us to return now?
In a minute, Lieutenant. I need to think. Jason went to the holodisplay, where the six surviving battle dragons of his rescue flotilla were in full pursuit of the Galni attackers. The remains of the defensive screen, seven rapidly blinking battle dragons, and a like number of Nova cruisers, were gathering to give chase. But Jason had anticipated that possibility, and had a plan to stop them. Tenel Ka's small force was already laying fire on the leading elements of the Galni fleet, and he thought it more likely than not that the Queen Mother would survive. Jason's gaze shifted to the tiny blue blips that represented Ben's and Jaina's and Zek's rescue beacons. The Longshot's designator was only a couple of centimeters away from them now. He knew Alima had been trying to make him doubt his parents' intentions, but she was gone, and those doubts remained. There were too many unanswered questions about his parents' role in the attempt on Tenel Ka's life, and the intelligence they had provided had been more harmful than useful. The fact was, Jason had begun to question his parents' motives before Alima ever boarded the Anakin, when he returned from Relifon to find Tenel Ka already under attack. Of course, he knew that the great Han and Leia Solo were capable of playing double agents. He had simply refused to believe they would participate in a cold-blooded assassination attempt against a friend. Lumia had been right. Jason had put loyalty to family above his mission. He had balked at the necessary sacrifices. And that hesitation had nearly cost Alana her mother and Hapes a queen mother, had come close to costing the Alliance one of her most important member states, and maybe even the war. Jason motioned Orlop and the others back into the salon, then activated the intercom.
Commander Twizzle, the time has come to smash the usurpers. Order the Anakin and her escorts to advance and engage. We need to wipe those Galni battle dragons off the tail of our rescue flotilla.
Very good, sir. Twizzle's voice was happy. And nicely done, if I may say so.
You may, Commander, Jason said. And I have one other order. Have one of our long-range batteries target the long shot.
There was a moment of silence. Then Twizzle said, But, Colonel, the long shot is a false transponder code. That transport is really—
Stop wasting time, Jason said. I'd like the vessel destroyed before it reaches those rescue beacons.
There was a moment of stunned silence. Then Twizzle said, Colonel Solo, the long shot is almost on them now.
I understand the risks, Commander.
Jason checked the datapad one more time and found Alana smiling up into the cam. Her eyes were sparkling with confidence and trust, and he knew he was doing the right thing for her and for all the children of the galaxy.
Assign our best gunnery team and fire away.